There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Look up here! Look up here! Look up here! Hey, you guys!
I think we've moved on past the sinking, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We've graduated to another plane of podcasting.
Sure, we just intuit each other. All the tracks just fall into place.
Okay.
Well, he's drunk.
Seems like an optimal time to hit record.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth.
Whee!
I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
Three for three! I got my sweet
jerry
with the shoes on.
That train is off the track.
Who doesn't love the bouncy castle?
Hitler. Just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Undebeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast. This is episode 167, coming from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're covering Ty Lawson, Chase Buttinger, Kevin Martin, Miles Turner. Joining me are our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What is up, Undebeatables? Quick shout out to college basketball. It's championship week. Going to get all your championship tourney. March Madness has begun. I'm excited. I'm actually heading up to New York to catch the Big East tournament. Catch some games in Madison Square Garden for the first time.
So, sweet time.
I am stoked.
From Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks in the crappy jingles, John the Iceman Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? It is Thirsty Thursday. Drink up.
Company from Eugene, Oregon, out west, our enforcer, John Harper.
What's going on, fellas? Shout out to the Pacers for their huge win over the Spurs on Monday.
Mm.
Or maybe their loss. I don't know. Cut out the one that's wrong.
Okay. Shout out to the Pacers' loss on Monday. You want me to cut that in, do you? Is that what this is? Splice that one in?
The mailbag.
Well, the first topic we want to get into, we've got a listener submission. Use the contact form on the website. It goes by the name of Call Me Pops.
Greg Popovich?
We could break off a little knowledge for Coach Pop.
Sure.
He says, you like to say what a great coach Frank Vogel is. Why can't he teach his team how to close out a game? Isn't there a teachable strategy or attitude or something? There have to be methods that can make it happen more often. Why can't we blame these endless near losses on coaching? Also, could you be specific on space and pace? Pace and space.
That's an angry fan right there. That's somebody who's been let down over and over again by these last-second losses.
That's somebody who's been watching all the games.
Yeah, yeah. So the question remains, do we blame this on coaching?
Well, I think that has been the general impression, right?
Yeah.
By people on this podcast and also people within the Pacers media, whatever that is, Twitterverse, right? Is that, you know, when you have a trend, a rash of these things going on, the common denominator is the coach, right? Or the coaching staff. Now, to get to the latter question, which is, isn't there a method to be successful at this, or, you know, aren't there ways to do this better? I'm going to guess that Frank Vogel has scoured all of the possible ways to do this.
Yeah. You can say a lot of things about Frank, but you can't say he doesn't work hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a great defensive mind, and he's the cult of positivity, right? He preaches a sort of positive attitude and kind of pats everybody on the butt. Seems to do that more than yell. And I think we've had an excellent run with him as our coach. I think it bums me out and makes me nervous that this is, you know, got to be laid on his doorstep. But maybe that's where we're at.
Sure. And certainly we've had a great run. It's just that now our expectations as fans have changed a little bit, right? We're no longer going to be content to be a middling team. We think that we've got the talent to do more. And that means everybody needs to step up. For me, the troubling trends are not getting to the right play on offense late in the game or settling for really subpar shots. Mm-hmm. And then the other really troubling thing that you see is sometimes we just get burnt by the same play multiple times in the same game. Like, you remember that game, I think it was against Miami, where they ran that same high curling screen and just like yoked on us three different times in the same game. Like, you can't have those kind of lapses. And as a coach, you've got to figure it out and make sure that your players are aware of the situation and what they need to do to guard the play, right? And those sort of lapses, you can't have. I think that he does a great job teaching the game generally to these guys and bringing them along. But the specific situational stuff does concern me at times.
Well, and you mentioned, and we've talked about before on this podcast, I think plays out of timeouts and out-of-bounds plays
Oy.
Tend to be not a strength for the Pacers. Mm-hmm. Whereas you look at a team like the Boston Celtics or the Spurs or the Warriors even, you know, when they have a chance to draw up a play in a timeout and get a good look specifically out of that possession, more often than not, they're successful in executing those things. And for the Pacers, it seems to be the opposite at some level. There's lots of turnovers out of timeouts and stuff like that, which is a definite concern, and I think is directly tied to coaching.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Joey and I were talking about this, I think, maybe off the air a couple weeks ago. We were kind of talking about, you know, in a way it's a little bit like soccer, right? You've got 90% of the game, which is running up and down the court and running the plays. Mm-hmm. Then you sort of got this other 10% that's like set pieces, right? Mm-hmm. And that 10%, you don't need all game every game, but it comes up big in the last 5 minutes, and it's even bigger in the playoffs. So teams that excel out of timeouts and, you know, closing halves in these sort of set situations, they're going to have much higher success rates.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't seem like Vogel's really just throwing the guys out there to give them the experience of making the mistake. It doesn't seem like he's doing that. It seems like he's calling a play, so we're supposed to be doing a thing, and we're just not executing very well for him most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a coaching thing, right? You've got to find a way to make your players understand it and make sure nobody leaves the timeout until everybody's on the same page.
So is this a Frank Vogel thing, or is this a broader coaching staff thing? I mean, because in a lot of places, you know, the head coach does what Vogel does, which is basically keep guys motivated, sort of establish the overarching culture of the team.
Big picture guy.
Yeah, which I think Vogel's done a great job of. And then the details are managed by
Nate McMillan.
Basically. The first assistant and second assistant or whatever, right? So is this lack of, you know, we always talk about, like, why don't we have, like, two or three plays that are just our freaking go-to. Why don't we have the equivalent of the Miami high pick Wade curl play for our end of game situations? Like what?
Or just steal that play. It works really good.
Yeah, exactly. It is a copycat league. Just yeah, take. It is. Just take. Yeah. So is this an assistant coaching problem?
I mean, there's no question that we miss Shaw, right? Yeah. I mean, we definitely do. But I mean, Nate's a good offensive mind. I mean, I think that you can't just lay it all at Vogel's feet. I don't think that's fair. But I think that anytime you talk about Vogel, I mean, Vogel would probably tell you that it's his job to take all the heat for all the staff anyway.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And sure. On the outside looking in, I don't know how to play that blame game anyway.
Sure.
So I'll let him take the heat for that because I don't know how to go out.
2 years ago or 3 years ago, I mean, fairly recently, even last year, this team talked about Frank Vogel like they would run through a brick wall for him. And I hear less of that now, but I didn't mean that that's not still true. I mean, these people love, this team loves this coach. Maybe with some of the staff turnover, maybe there is some, less loyalty. Maybe he built some of these younger players, like the Hibberts, and gave him a chance and stuff. And maybe this year he doesn't have the same loyalty from his guys. And that just translated onto the floor on some level. I don't know.
But I don't think that's going to be why they can't inbound the ball. Right.
Well, no, but I mean, it affects cultural stuff, and that affects.
I hate you, Dad. I'm throwing this pass away.
I just tried to figure out the difference between 2 or 3 years ago and this year.
Yeah, and there's definitely been a lot of turnover on the roster, so these guys that just came in have less allegiance to Vogel, but at the same time, I mean, guys like. Jan Mahimi has to love Frank Vogel, right?
Right.
He's been given a chance to do things, and Turner, and maybe Paul George has less affinity for his coach, who tried to make him play a position he didn't want to play.
But that wasn't Vogel as much. That was Vogel trying to implement Bird's
vision of this.
Yeah. His vision of pace and space, which is the next part of this email question.
Do you want to explain? Can you explain pace and space to me, Colson?
Sure. I mean, what I understand it is that it's basically that. It's about figure out how to.
All right. Next topic.
That's good. The reason small ball can often be talked about at the same time with pace and space because basically the goal is to spread the floor and give each individual basketball player as much space on the floor to operate as possible. And then you want to create a pace through movement, off the ball movement, and quick passing, and optimizing, the open spaces in the floor to hit shots. And so a lot of times that's three-pointers to allow the inside game to work or inside game to allow the three-point shot to work. So you're basically just moving the ball and moving people all the time and allowing as much space on the floor for each player as possible. Is that a decent understanding of that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the other critical piece is the pace part is sort of born out of this statistical revolution where it's become realized that to give yourself a better chance to win – if you have more possessions in a game, then you have a better chance to win.
Sure.
Right. And so that's where the pace comes. So you take shots earlier in the shot clock than maybe used to be done. And in that way, you get more possessions per game is the idea. And if you're efficient enough in that, then you have a better chance to win because you basically are more efficient per possession. So
just to give a little bit of history, since I know we got a lot of Indiana listeners, this all kind of grew out of the motion offense, which was originally innovated by Henry Eba, who was an Oklahoma State guy, but Bob Knight ran it as well. And one of the other things that happens is instead of drawing up a bunch of X's and O's and lines, the offense is really predicated upon reading and reacting and not running the same play. It's about not being predictable. It's about reacting to a set of principles on the court. So that requires a bunch of basketball players with high IQs. You guys remember Isaiah Thomas tried to do something like this.
Yeah, the read and react offense from...
Yeah, it didn't so much work out for him. But when you've got Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, or you're coached by Greg Popovich, other... the potential's higher. So there's that. But it's basically, yeah, small ball comes into it because... You know, we're moving threes to fours in order to stretch the floor out and create space for guys to drive.
Right. There's not two guys clogging up the lane. You got guys to kick it out to shoot three-pointers.
Yep. And you have to be unselfish when you play it. You have to be willing to set the screens on the backside and understand if you don't have the ball, you got to go somewhere.
Right.
I also love, apparently Popovich during the All-Star game came up with a new offensive set, which he called pace and space and only having superstars and mostly just alley-oops.
That sounds like a slam ball, I think.
Yeah.
Isn't that mostly what slam ball was?
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think the key difference is, you know, the Pacers still fall into this trap a lot is they play the old style of offense where it's you come up the floor and it takes – you call a play and it takes 5 or 10 seconds – for that play to even start to get into motion versus other teams that come down and just immediately sort of set a high screen, move off of that, and then
see how there's the defense
player. Yeah. And there's player and ball movement that immediately happens after that. Yeah. It's more of a flow type game than it is a designed.
Mm-hmm. It's more you improvisation run
here at this moment. Yeah,
it is improvisation.
What was that, Joe?
And that unpredictability can serve you well offensively. I mean, we talked, I think, before the season about how the Warriors were going to, you know, a no-playbook offense, right?
Well, and you talk about a copycat league. I mean, 90% of the league is at least using elements of the pace and space, whether they're running that complete offense or not. They're using elements of it, some to more successful degrees than others. The Pacers say, hey, we're going to do pace and space, and we haven't really... Mm-hmm. Done that.
By the way, we are playing at a faster pace.
We are, without a doubt,
faster pace than we did the last 3 years.
I think I totally agree, but I think we're just using elements of it. As I wouldn't say that we're clearly running a space and pace offense. You know,
Yeah, I agree with that. And also, I just want to say, I think it was during the Wizards game. We actually executed a 2-for-1 in the fourth quarter, which made me extremely happy inside because we suck at the 2-for-1s. And no matter what the situation is, your odds of winning a game are always better in a 2-for-1. So, Vogel, if you're listening, respect the 2-for-1.
Mm. Why would you not do that? That's you do that every
extremely
time.
Frustrating. And I feel like we do not execute the 2-for-1 well at all.
Yeah, we do like that.
Because we just like to run the clock and play defense.
Things are going to change now, right, Joey?
That's right. They're going to change.
New personnel.
New personnel. I guess we need to start this off with this deal is not finished. It should be finished by the time you hear this, but Chase Buttinger waived by the team. I think they bought out the contract. But
that's official. That's done.
That part is done, yes.
Yep.
He's gone. So
did you put together a montage of Chase Buttinger highlights, Colson?
Yeah. It's only 10 seconds long, though.
All of our clips, it included a lot of jump shots from that stretch where he was like 1-for-25 from three-point range.
No, I think all the audio clips we have are from before the season. We were talking about how we didn't like the name Chase. I think it's always...
Gotcha.
That's not his fault, though.
We didn't talk a lot about him during the season, although I thought he was a professional basketball player who, played hard when he played and smart. So thanks for wearing a Pacer jersey, Chase.
Yeah. Good cup of coffee.
So the rumor on the street is because he was let go after the March 1st date, he cannot play in the playoffs. So it sounds like a team who will not be going to the playoffs is chasing after him. I'm sorry.
Painted yourself in a corner, didn't you?
I did.
Then I immediately apologized to the listener.
But it sounds like the Phoenix Suns are trying to pick him up. That part is official. The unofficial part, which should be complete here soon, is Ty Lawson was also waived from Houston. That part was official. Pacers apparently are close to inking a deal with him. Ty Lawson really didn't even finish. Didn't even finish a full season in Houston. Was in Denver before that. Had some issues and they let him go. But that's what it sounds like. He's a point guard and he was a starting point guard. You know, good player, but. Troubled history recently, and so he's just been let go into the ether from Houston. We may absorb him into our essence here soon. JT, what do you know about Ty Lawson? Do you like this guy? Do you want him on the team? Is he gonna be a Pacer killer?
I don't know the answer to that question. I am intrigued by the fact that he does a lot of things that I think can help this ball team out. I mean, we talked before the trade deadline about what we as individual analysts might want to see on this team. And my thing was, I wanted another ball handler off the bench that could create offense. And that's exactly what Ty Lawson is. So that part has me excited because I think that he can give really good backup point guard minutes and really affect that second unit and hopefully make some things happen. Now, the flip side is, as you mentioned, he's not been a positive contributor to the locker rooms of teams for the last year and a half. You know, he played in Denver where he did quite well, but was arrested for 2 DUIs, and then they didn't want to deal with it, so they bought him out, and then Houston signed him, and he played sparingly there, basically. And that altogether is a disrupted locker room. Who knows what's going on there? There's just an array of knuckleheads. So he hasn't been in a great environment for a while. So who knows what frame of mind he's in. And it could be disruptive to the locker room, I guess, worry.
Before we sign him, hopefully Larry Bird knows what kind of state of mind he's in.
I doubt he does.
Larry Bird doesn't care. No, seriously, Larry Bird doesn't care about chemistry. If you can play basketball, he'll put you on the floor. We've learned this since Larry Bird has been the GM. He does not care. So figure it out.
Right. So
that's what he wants you to do. Figure it out.
Exhibit A, Andrew Bynum.
But I think that what Larry is drawn to is guys who have their backs against the wall, right? Guys who are playing for their NBA career. And that's what Ty Lawson represents, right? This is a guy who might be in last chance territory, right? So if he's ever going to contribute in this league, he should be very hungry right now. For me, my intuition is kind of with you, Colson, right? That we're giving up a player in Chase Buttinger, who very good teammate, very good locker room guy, very high IQ ball player, and we don't know exactly what we're going to get in the locker room from Ty Lawson. On the court, super high IQ, pass first point guard, lots and lots of upside. Doesn't shoot the ball particularly well, but can make all kinds of stuff happen. Especially, I mean, this guy used to start in this league. He could tear up second units in this league.
What was it, 2 years ago? He was like the third in the league in assists with almost 10 a game. Like, the guy's a really good point guard.
Yeah, and he averages 7.5 on his career.
Yeah.
Yeah. His last 2 years in Denver, he was doing 17.6 and 8.8 assists a game, and then 15.2 and 9.6 assists a game. I mean, this dude is like very talented basketball player, obviously. The thing I would like to see, or am excited about, I guess, is that he might be able to provide this sort of this X factor thing, this je ne sais quoi that we don't have right now, right? Which gets people excited, you know? And I think
including
attacking
the people on the court.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean. Our bench.
Okay,
like,
gotcha.
Yeah. Not the people in the stands, but like the actual guys on the team. Because he attacks in the open court, and he can do really fantastic things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of ooh and ah type plays or whatever. Which sure. We don't have a ton of those guys on the roster right now. And while that's not always, that doesn't always lead to successful basketball, but it gets people engaged into the game. You know?
And for me, to the extent that we want to play pace and space, we need a guy like this on our team, right? Mm-hmm. We need a pace and space point. I think that this
Ball up quick, get it down into the paint, kick it out to the three-point shooter.
Just pass it generally. Like, Rodney Stuckey is our ball handler in the second unit. You can't play quick when Rodney Stuckey is your ball handler. Mm-hmm. The ball's not going to move. It just is what it is. And Ty Lawson, a very smart guy. Not a great defender, like, at all. But I think what you can say, though, is that, we defend the point terribly against elite point guards anyway. And, B, what he does do is make those guys work on their defensive end, right? Because he's going to be moving, he's going to be active, and he's going to make sure that he wears them out during his time on the floor.
He's as good a defender as Joe Young, for sure.
Yeah. High praise.
Shout out, Joe.
Shout out, Joe Young. Mighty Joe Young.
Two things. One is still that the Paul George, Joe Young commercial, the Gatorade commercial. I laugh every time. Joe Young kills me.
Nice. Nice.
The second thing is, so you mentioned the Andrew Bynum trade from a couple of years ago. That basically, seems like it destroyed Roy Hibbert's career. Even
Roy
though
Hibbert,
Bynum,
Roy Hibbert had his whole own host of problems already.
Well, it wasn't the same since then.
I would say
on top of that too, trading away the leader in the locker room of Danny Granger was also part of not caring.
That had nothing to do with it. It was just this only. Just
but
the
so
thing
that
I said.
Trade though, I don't think that cost us a championship. And if it did, that team was too fragile to win a championship. And at the end of the day, we got LaVoy Allen out of that trade.
No, I agree. Yeah. I love LaVoy Allen, but I still think that we could have gotten to the finals if we had.
Well, and I think Colson's larger point is that that's more evidence that Larry Bird does not give an F about chemistry.
Yeah, he doesn't at all. He's just like, whatever, I'll take the emotional leader on the team and trade him away for somebody who I think is going to be better, or I'll bring in a knucklehead. I mean, the thing is, maybe this team, maybe Larry Bird is a crazy genius, and we actually miss Lance Stephenson. I mean, you talk about how this team is so staid and how it doesn't seem excited enough.
We need a knucklehead. Right
well, that's a, that's kind of my point. Was there's a no two knucklehead rule, but I think there should be maybe an equally important no zero knucklehead rule.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that, right. You're not bad. This is not bad
unless you're. The
I think
Spurs.
There should be a very
unless you're the Spurs. Yeah,
right. Yes, Steven Jackson got shipped off when he was on the Spurs. We had no knuckleheads, and
he won a ring there first, though, didn't he?
Yeah, he did, for sure.
That wasn't bad for him.
The case where I think Roy Hibbert thought someone was coming from, they had someone to like maybe take his job away. We don't really have a bench point guard that was worried about that. You have combo guards that will play the point because they're asked to play the point. But like I think if you guys said Stuckey, will you play the two guard on the bench? He would say,
well, that's what he plays now. Basically, I mean, we essentially have either Joe Young or Monte Ellis playing the point in the second unit.
But I think those guys would prefer not to do that. But Joe Young,
I think it's great for Ellis because it gives him five more minutes of rest a game,
which is
good.
Mm.
And I don't think George Hill is worried at all about losing his starting position.
Oh, not at all. There's no way he's going to lose his job.
And I think Joe Young's a rookie, so his feelings don't matter. So it's fine.
I will say this. You can't say there's no way George Hill will lose his starting job. Can't say that.
Not this season. There's no way that he will lose his starting job this season.
Frank Vogel
loves defense too much to take George Hill out of the starting lineup.
Who was the last elite point guard that George Hill had success against?
I don't know.
It's a really hard league to defend point guards.
It's a competitive league. The best player plays. That's the way it goes.
Sure.
And if Ty Lawson really does bring his A game, he's a better point guard for our system.
But I think that five-man unit, our starting five unit is still pretty good. It's
Which one
of the better.
We've had 18 this year already.
Well, the one that includes George Hill, Ellis, Paul George, Turner. Ever since we put Turner in the starting lineup,
yeah,
and Mahaney.
Vogel does not believe in.
We're playing 500 ball since then, but yeah, you're right. The analytics look better.
I would say at the very least, Ty Lawson will get some starts. I don't know if he'll be our starter, but the way that Vogel shuffles lineups,
you do. You think that Ty Lawson will get a start?
I don't.
Without an injury happening to
George. Bold,
sure.
Bold.
Why not?
I
you
want to
bet a Game of Thrones beer on that?
No.
No.
No, I don't.
But I will.
I'll bet you money commensurate with that.
But you just don't want to give up.
I won't give you beer. Though.
If you buy a Game of Thrones beer, there's no way it's leaving your house. Uh-oh. Gotcha.
Winter is coming, Jason.
George Hill likes being a two guard as well, so I don't even think he'd cry.
That's true. That's true. I agree. George Hill is excellent at two guard. Nobody is concerned at all about Ty Lawson's drinking, right? It'll be fine. He's recovered, and it's...
What? And of course I'm worried about that.
No.
Worried about that?
He's totally fine. He's going to be great. It'll be fine.
I don't care about his drinking. I care about his jackassery.
Yeah. Don't drink and drive. You can drink all you want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure most NBA players drink.
Sure. Well, no. Drinking is not his problem. I guess his problem is not having a driver, which we have talked about on this pod.
Well, but there
that
are reports
to be
of him.
Get him a chaperone.
There are concerns of him being an alcoholic, though. No, there are reports of him showing up to practice and just reeking of alcohol and stuff
right?
So this is like a definite issue.
It's a real issue, sure.
That needs to be that. Hopefully, Larry throws some resources behind, you know, making sure that he has a support system around him to help make sure he's in the right space, right, headwise.
Right.
And
right. To make light of it. I mean, this is, you know, it's a man's life and, you know, want to make sure we help him get right and all that, so.
Yeah, and if he comes into Mikado, definitely first sake bomb on us.
Sure.
Compliments to the Unbeatables.
But then cut him off.
But out only after the game. And no, you can't drive after.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah. We'll get him an Uber afterwards.
Yeah.
Be fine.
Yeah, we could do that.
Uber is so cheap. How does anybody get a DUI anymore? Here's advice to the world. Uber is so cheap now. You're never allowed to get a DUI ever again.
I saw an article, I think, that in cities where they have Uber, DUIs are down 10% or something.
Really?
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
New York is trying to outlaw Uber because it's cutting into their revenue stream.
Oh yeah, probably it's messing up that pretty bad.
Yeah, De Blasio is all about getting all of his money from.
Well, basically that's what I thought. He just wants to tax them, right? So make up for the lost DUI revenue.
It's about time for a break.
So overall,
yeah, just going to a weird place.
Keep going.
But before
keep
we
going.
Before we take a break, let me get into some crazy politics now. Are we overall positive about this move? Are we happy that the Pacers made this move, or are we angry? I know that some people in our group, Superfan Connie is not happy.
She was letting it fly.
She sent a text with 40,000 hashtags in it. I didn't even know what was going on. I don't know where I fall. I think overall I'm up on this move. I think it's a low risk, high reward move, as far as I can tell.
That's just it, right? I mean, what are we going to break here? I mean, we're barely inside the playoffs. I mean, yes, we could potentially fall.
Seventh seed.
We're
in the seventh
out
seed
of the
right
playoffs.
Now. Yeah,
but I don't think that would be... I mean, if Ty Lawson doesn't work out, you sit the guy, right? I mean, that's kind of what it is.
Or you cut the guy.
We wouldn't be the first. And the upside...
Ooh.
And I think the upside is so huge for us. I really think that we need a player like him. If you just look at him on paper, he's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
When you read the resume, it gets a little murky, but I still think it's definitely worth a shot for us.
Joey, where do you land?
Well, I mean, I did like Chase, but you know, we've got Solomon Hill kind of did a lot of the same stuff he did, and that guy, you know, that guy comes to work every time they call his number, he's doing work. So,
boy, done.
You know, you don't have to worry too much about that. I guess the way I see it right now is they just somehow turned Dama Rudej into a starting point guard, basically.
Right?
Yeah. That's a good way to look at it.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, all right. Like, I like Chase. I'll miss him. But, Ty Lawson, if he plays to his potential, he is a starting point guard in this league. So, you know, you can either rip up somebody else's bench with that, or you know, you can do some different lineups, because we have a lot of combo guards that people can play in different positions, and they'll be okay. And Ty Lawson can fit in, I think, with the system we have. And like I'm saying, I think Jason, like you were saying, having a little bit of an X factor out there, it might be good for us.
All right, Colson, hit the panic button.
Well, no. I just real briefly, from
just
what I'm hearing...
Cancel the season, right?
From what I'm hearing, Chase Budinger wanted to go. This isn't like we just cut him and dropped him out on the street, yep, left him to die. Like, he was... I think we have Uber.
That was weirdly, that was Larry Bird's first option. He was like, can we just drop this guy on a corner?
Yeah. Yeah. He'd been watching way too much Hunger Games.
Yeah.
But no, I think they were... I think Larry and Chase were having some beers, and Chase was like, "Man, I'm not really seeing enough minutes." And Bird was like, "I'll see what I can do." So, I think everybody's happy with this situation.
Remind me not to ask Larry for a raise.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, "Oh, I'll see what I can do."
I can't get you more minutes on this team per se, but we'll see what I can do. I'm with everybody else. I feel like this could be great. But I don't think it's going to move the needle too much either way. I don't think it can destroy us. I don't think it's going to create us. It's, you know, therapy 101. This guy's not going to create or destroy us as a team. But I think I, you know,
I'm optimistic. Are you talking about the conservation of energy right now?
I'm optimistic, that, he will help the second unit and, you know, get us 4 or 5 or 7 more points a game, so that we don't have to lose these games by, you know, 1 or 2 down the stretch.
Mm-hmm. Fine, I'm going the other way then. He'll either create or destroy us.
I don't know. Ooh, that's a bold prediction. And I don't even know what that means.
You do not. But I'm going.
I think
with
somehow
it.
We broke a law of physics, though, in the last 5 minutes.
Wow. I think now it is time for a break.
Is it not the end of the show?
Oh,
really?
Should have been. This week, normally, you know, we get musical talent from Indianapolis, but you know, I think we spend a lot of our time talking about other basketball teams from the Central Division. So I think we could talk about some musicians from the Midwest as well. There's a city has a team, Chicago. I feel like it's like Indy's little brother, just up the road. They've got a musician up there, Neek. This one is called Doodat That. I feature an Ad 2. I've heard a couple different tracks by Ad 2. So this song, we'll get a link to it on Bringing Down the Band, but you can buy it on Bandcamp. Check it out. I've been listening to it a lot of today. It's good work. So this is Neek, Doodat That.
Rockin' fly shit with blood diamonds. That's the image I grew up wanting. I fell in line with street niggas just posing and looking cool, shining. Know what to do for it? I can't really describe it, cause I don't wanna point the finger on who destroying who to get the cream either.
Go make it out or make it under. You don't want to be the ladder, because our ladder never reaches the top of what really matters. Dreams. So I'm thankful of that moment on the stage when the light's shining bright and many don't see my age. Love. And when I see the crowd, I see God's promise. I see a bright future. Love my group is the oddest. No matter what you dealt, play the cards cool. The dirty bottom, the pressure from it can make jewels. So when I see myself, I see a crown leaning. All in all, I see life and know the meaning.
I spread love.
Yeah, we do that. Yeah.
It's one love.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah. Other days like mine.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah, we do that.
It's one love.
Yeah, we do that.
Other days like mine.
Yeah, we do that.
Yeah, we do that.
Back from the break. Thanks to Neek for that. Yeah, you guys should, if you like the stuff, anything you listen to that you like on the show, we always get links to it. Most of the stuff you can buy. I always love supporting local artists. I know, Colson, you like supporting theater. I like music.
I do, yep.
Next, we want to get into my stat of the week.
Joey's stat of the week!
This week, I want to talk about the Spurs. I always like talking about the Spurs. These guys undefeated at home this year, 30-0. The zeros for no losses. They were undefeatable at home. It's unbelievable.
Thank you for helping me with that stat, Joey.
Well, sometimes the stats don't make sense. You've been reading a lot of Steph Curry stats, also don't make sense.
Fair enough.
These guys are having an amazing year. You know, the media, the big media, talks about the Golden State Warriors all the time. But the Spurs are right behind them. They're having the best season of their franchise, at least record-wise. They're, like I was saying, 30-0 at home. They're having an amazing road record. I don't think they've lost on the second night of a back-to-back. Like, it's...
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's crazy. The Pacers just won their first road one this last week. Spurs don't lose them.
It's insane.
Yeah. That's one of those marks of real greatness when you can have a winning record, let alone dominate back-to-backs. That's insane.
Well, and they've clinched their 19th consecutive playoff berth.
Jerks.
And of those 19 seasons, they've also clinched being over 50 wins in 18 of those. The only season that they weren't a 50-win team was the lockout season of 98-99, when they were on pace to win over 60 games.
But there just weren't
just
enough
about
games.
60 games. There just weren't. There were only 50 games that season. They couldn't win 50.
That's the only reason why they didn't.
Yeah.
So, here's my fun fact of the week.
Harper's unofficial stat of the week.
Since December 2nd, and this doesn't include the loss today, I don't think, for the Warriors, the Spurs have been winning at a percentage of .878 compared to, before this loss, .884 for the Warriors. So the Spurs have actually been the better team since December 2nd in terms of wins. That's several months of basketball. That's so, really terrifying.
Wait, that just broke my brain.
What? Wow. So since December 2nd, you're saying that they have a better win percentage?
That's correct.
Wow.
That's most of the season.
Yep, but they dropped a couple early.
That was clever.
When they were integrating.
It, yeah. He's like, and then we'll just fly under the radar.
At a 70-win clip.
Exactly. We'll drop five in the first month and a half, then we'll stop losing ever.
Oh, my God. They're so insane.
So their best season ever was 63 wins. They're going to shatter that this year, right?
Right, yeah.
Unless they start resting guys.
I also heard a stat that they were the fourth best record after 60 games in the history of basketball. I love that stat.
And a lot of this was without Ginobili, who had missed about a month.
Right.
with a gross surgery. He just came back. It put up big numbers, like, you know, big 20, 25-point night on his return. These guys are good.
If you were worried about winning a championship and needed, like, you know, just in case somebody got hurt, would you sign some insurance? Would you sign somebody that would, you know, just in case?
I would.
Or would you just be like,
but here's the thing. Yeah, the Spurs, I wouldn't either. The Spurs might do that.
Mm.
That's why they're smarter than me. They just picked up Kevin Martin from the Minnesota Timberwolves. What does he do? He scores you points. What else does he do for you?
Yeah, no, he historically is pretty good at shooting threes and getting to the free throw line. I think that's kind of what he does, right?
Yes. So in 2012, Martin played for OKC and came off the bench, which is probably a similar role to what he'll have with the Spurs. He averaged 14 points on 45% shooting, over 42% from three-point range, and 89% from the line, and helped that team win 60 games.
Yeah, he's one of these statistical guys that the stats guys love because he does, you know, the new math stuff. So that's why the Spurs would pick him up. That's good. That's good. And he's just going to sit on the bench. I'm sad for whatever poor bastard has to get cut, who was basically on their way to a title. I don't know. Is it Rasul Butler? I love you, Zool. It doesn't look good for you, buddy. Or Jonathan Simmons. I think they like that kid. I know they like the 7'3 Boban. It looks like it's probably going to be Rasul.
It does kind of stink if you know you've been riding the bench on this amazing team and you know
sure
you already bought the little case that you're gonna put your ring in.
Well, I think Sewell's the handshake guy, so I think he's central to what that locker room does. So.
Yeah. Also, he's a vet. They love vets there. So.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, I think the Spurs they get a bunch of rings anyway, so they probably give rings to anybody that played on their team at any point.
Right? Oh, that's true.
Okay.
And probably give a few to charity every year just for good measure.
Yeah.
Those guys probably would.
So, Joey, you called.
I called it.
I think you should put it on the air because you just called it to us. But you think the Spurs are going to beat the Warriors in the Western Conference Finals.
That's my prediction. Yeah. Western Conference Finals. It's going to be Spurs over the Warriors. I think they're going to do it. I think...
This was pre Kevin Martin signing.
This was pre Kevin Martin signing. Yeah. You know, I think, and this was pre loss to the Lakers. You know, you can have a bad night, like we've seen, and the same thing happened. I think when Golden State played, was it Minnesota or Milwaukee? That's the one that was the first game of the year they lost. Mm-hmm. They went ice cold from three, and they lost that game earlier in the year. Golden State did. You know, I think if anybody's got a chance, clearly the Spurs are going to be the ones going to give it to them.
Sure.
They're monsters. Like, they were already, you know, they're having one of the best seasons in the history of basketball. They just upgraded whatever they had. You know, I'm not sure who's going away, but they just upgraded again. You know, you only get so many upgrades.
Upgraded some guy whose name you don't know with Kevin Martin.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and there's no room for Kevin Martin. It doesn't even matter. He's just there just in case. Andre Miller's the same way.
Yeah.
It's crazy. They just now they go 15 deep and they're not going to need them. It's crazy.
But they'll use them.
Yeah, they will. You're right.
Pop's going to see something out of a corner of his eye. He's going to say Andre Miller would solve this problem.
Yeah. He's going to see that he can't win the West, so he'll just not play Timmy or L.A. or Tony Parker for the last 10 games of the season. And they'll go into the playoffs super rested. It's just how Pop rolls.
But that's my prediction. Spurs going to the finals.
I think, if memory serves, I picked the Spurs going to the finals this year, too. Obviously, this is before the Warriors turned into some ridiculous Warriors dynasty, right. But...
Right.
How are you going to beat great offense? I mean, I guess your best bet is great defense. And the Spurs have that in spades for sure. So this is literally there's almost no chance. I mean, if they don't meet this year, I'm quitting basketball. I'm just stopping. Not watching it, not doing a pod, nothing. Because this is going to be...
You're talking about Golden State Spurs?
It's going to be epic if they if they meet in the playoffs, right? I mean, this is going to be the two best teams that we've ever seen outside of the 95-96 Bulls. And they're playing in the same year, in the same building against each other. I can't...
And they both probably not lost at home the entire time.
And that's entirely a possible outcome.
I want to watch that right now.
I know. It's going to be fantastic.
I like this prediction, and I can't make a decision yet. I mean, I have been watching the Warriors all year, and I just can't fathom a way that a team could beat them four times in seven games.
Right.
But I haven't seen them. They've only played the Spurs once, and they handled them in that one game. Mm. So I want to see them play, you know, these two more times in the regular season, which I think they play this Saturday, next Saturday.
Oh, it's like twice in a week and a half or something.
Though. Yeah. It might be the primetime game on this coming Saturday.
Now, here's the thing about Pop. You know, you wonder whether he's going to show Golden State anything.
I don't wonder. I know he's not going to.
You know the answer. Yeah.
Well, no, but unless he decides that they need home court. And then maybe he goes after that and tries to... Because you can get a whole game here. They're only three games back in the loss column right now. Even after this historic push by Golden State. Sure.
They've got two head-to-heads.
If you win both of those, you know, that's you could actually win the West. So, you know, it's interesting to be decide what to see what Pop decides on that.
Wouldn't that be a wild outcome to this season if the Spurs end up winning the West?
Yeah. Like, they win 71 and Golden State wins 70 or something like that.
Yeah. I guess we should, I guess it's not technically possible for both those teams to go undefeated at home because they each have to play each other one another's court.
That's true. I had not thought about that.
I was thinking, obviously, of a tie.
Oh, wait, no, I guess it's still the same. Yeah, it is still possible.
The home team's playing those.
Never mind. Yeah.
But it's not possible for the Spurs, all probability, to win the West
without winning both of those games.
Without winning on the Warriors' court.
It's just become in my mind so hard for me to imagine either of those teams losing any games that I couldn't I couldn't get it through my head.
It's mind bending.
But so yeah, Saturday, March 19th at the Spurs, 8:30 PM on ABC. Tune into that one.
Is that a Saturday game?
That's a Saturday night, yeah. And then April 7th, that's a Thursday night TNT game in Golden State. Holy shit. Oh, no, and then they play again on Sunday, April 10th. Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
Crazy.
One non-Spurs thing to talk about.
What?
I know. Sorry, guys.
Boo.
Yeah. You may remember a rookie the Pacers have, Miles Turner, who was named Rookie of the Month last month. He's having a great year since he came back from his injury.
Shout out.
Congratulations, Miles.
Well, it's good. Obviously, we've been watching him, you know, all year, and he's a starter. You know, he's been solid. He's been, you know, exceeding all predictions, especially from Colson. You know, I think he's doing a great job.
What?
I thought it was a weird stance for Colson to just say that Bird wasted that pick.
Do we actually have the stats on how he got his Rookie of the Month? It was like 12 points and 8 boards.
It was 13.4 points, 6.6 boards, and 1.8 blocks.
So you're underselling him still, Colson.
That's right, I am. That's great. I when's the last time that we had a rookie starting for us? Like, this is huge. Besides Jamal Tinsley.
Yeah, that was the last person to win Rookie of the Month, was Jamal Tinsley. In the, I think it was 2001-2002 season. Does that sound right?
Harper, do you remember we were living in New Orleans that year, and he put up like 21 assists or something? It was the most for a rookie ever, and we thought we'd found that the answer at point that we've been looking for since Mark Jackson had left the team. And
yet today we picked up Ty Lawson.
Oh, it should be noted that he was the Eastern Conference Rookie of the Month.
Oh, yes.
Karl Anthony Towns just won his fourth consecutive Western Conference Rookie of the Month.
Yeah. Not accidentally either. 21.1, 11.8, 53.7 from the floor, and a 1.6 blocks a game.
Yeah, that makes more sense, because my next question was going to be, was this a pity award because they're tired of giving it to Karl Anthony Towns? Turns out, no, they just keep giving him awards. So,
and so these were career-high games you're talking about. This is a Karl Anthony Towns average.
That's the Big Cat's average for
the month of February. Yeah.
He also had a 30-15 effort. And that, by the way, was a win over the Pelicans, who have another big man who's fairly young.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Are we at all worried that Miles Turner, obviously we've talked about him on the show. We think he's great. Are we worried that he's starting to hit his rookie wall now? Mm. Because basically he, you know, played a couple weeks, hurt his thumb, and then was out for 6 weeks and then came back. And now he's been playing for a little over a month, right? A month and a half, maybe. Which is about the time that rookies start to feel the burn of the NBA season. And he's definitely, his numbers have gone down in the past week or so since he won this award. So.
Well, I think I'd make the argument that most of the time the rookie wall is about fatigue. And he shouldn't be a victim of that because he wasn't on the court for so many games. But what does change for him is with his success comes a lot more attention, right? And when he's putting up the kind of numbers that he is, coaches are going to want to stop him.
Sure.
And that means that he's not getting guarded by the, you know, fourth worst player on other teams. They're bringing real attention and heat to try and shut him down. And that's going to affect, one would think, any rookie. I mean, it's just, you know, he's never played competition this good, and that's taking another leap up, right? They're going to be throwing better and better defenders at him, and they're going to be giving him multiple looks. So he's got some stuff to work through, but he's got some time to do it. You know, we got a good month of basketball before the playoffs, so he'll be fine.
Yep.
We'll be good. He'll be good.
We're making the playoffs, right?
Yeah, yes. We'll do that.
We got a good shot. That's for sure.
All right.
This is where we wanted to be. I mean, we talked about at the All-Star break that coming out of the All-Star break, we had a really tough stretch of basketball.
Oh, and we're still in that.
Yeah, we're just getting to the end of that now. Basically, this weekend we play at Dallas and at Atlanta, I think. And then the schedule gets much easier. Much more home-heavy against much lesser competition. So, schedule-wise, we are in better shape than these other teams that we're battling with.
So amongst Eastern Conference teams, we have, and I think this is as of the Charlotte game, we had the ninth easiest remaining strength of schedule. Bad news for us, ahead of us are Washington, Charlotte, and Miami. Now, once we get the Spurs out of the way, that strength of schedule will go way down because they're responsible for like half the league's wins.
But we're at Dallas, at Atlanta, Boston, and Toronto, and then Oklahoma City. Now, granted, Boston, Toronto, and Oklahoma are all at our house, but those are all playoff teams.
Yep.
After that, it gets pretty soft. So
yeah, and we should be fine. And you know, Boston, fine. Atlanta, good team. These are all well-coached teams, but they're all Eastern Conference teams, and they've had their struggles too. These are teams that we can beat 50% of the time.
For sure.
So we got to go out and win a few games, not just the ones that we should.
Yeah. Well, Atlanta and Boston and Toronto are all way better teams than us right now. Yeah. They just are. So we've got to figure out how to beat them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and plus that game against Dallas, it's an automatic win. I mean, because we have the time travel advantage. Yeah. We already notched that one in.
Notch that one now.
We should get more of those on the schedule.
The great thing about time travel is you can just do it later. It doesn't even matter. All right. The time to get out of here?
Yeah.
Sure.
You just want to do it later, Coulson? Let's just do it now.
He'll circle back around next week.
Yeah, exactly. Until next time, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. You can find us on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. You can send us all a message. Just like Call Me Pops did. You can review us on iTunes. It really helps new listeners find our show. We got t-shirts for sale on the website /store.
I'm John Colson, your analyst from the future. And I've come to try to stop the current John Colson from singing this song.
Oh, he did it.
We're going to have to
turn out the lights.
Oh, no.
The party's over.
You know, I thought future John Colson would have had time to learn past John Colson's weaknesses.
No, there was an epic battle. I won, though.
Yeah. See, this is what...
Wait, which one said that?
The guy a week from now is sucks. Yeah, he's no good.
He is sucks.
Clearly you didn't watch enough Terminator movies. You don't know how this time travel shit works.
I gotta keep working on it.
Did you guys see that there were all these tweets about basically talking to the person that's supposed to stop the Trump presidency?
They're like, oh, that's awesome.
You need to hurry up and do this now, man. It's getting dangerous.
That's great.
Colson?
Yep.
Too smart for this shit.
I was looking up a Spurs stat, and now I'm on what the cast of Harry Potter looks like now. that's where I'm at.
Then we're ready. We're as ready as we're gonna be.
Yo! Everybody get up! Everybody get up! Everybody needs to understand that I'm more than simply a hype man for this rap group. Just like Geico is more than just a company that can save you money. Geico also has fast and friendly claim service, so they can help you when you need it most. And while I do love being a hype man, I also love reading for children's audiobooks. Like Little Bo Peep, she lost a sheep, and she don't know where to find them. Yo!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.